That's right, everybody. Don't let your mama into the room. Don't let your little sister in here. You just sit down, get ready for Kalina and Saylet. They're reading dirty books. Shh. We're reading dirty books.
Hello, welcome to Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books. I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And we're happy to be back for another discussion of some paranormal romance novel. So, how are you?
I'm good. I just went to the wound clinic today at the doctor's office and they let me know that my dog bite from Mother's Day 2 months ago.
Since time doesn't mean anything.
Right, exactly. It's true. Time means nothing. I don't have to wear any more dressing. My wound is clear, so I can go swimming in the swimming pool. But, so that's exciting. So, I'm going to give you three names, and you could only choose one, and you have to tell me why. Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, or Chris Pratt. You only get one for whatever reason.
Go! Hemsworth, Evans, or Pratt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you know who they are.
Yeah. I think so. I'm pretty sure.
You know Hemsworth.
It's Thor, Captain America, and Star-Lord.
Yeah, Star-Lord, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Anyone. I would say Pratt. Chris Pratt.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because he's very sexy, but he's also, like, fun and funny. And, like, his Twitter or, you know, Instagram is really hilarious. Yeah. And he and his wife are fucking adorable.
Oh, my God. They are so cute.
So cute. I mean, Hemsworth is a really tight second there because he's gorgeous. But I actually think Liam's hotter than Chris, so.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Liam. I was just kind of going on the Chris theme.
Yeah, no. I mean, you could have thrown Chris Pine in there, too.
That's true. That surprises me because I for sure thought that you would have gone for Hemsworth. I did. Because mine is Chris Pratt, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, I like funny guys. And mm-hmm. I mean, he is adorable. Like, he's gorgeous. But he's
from
also
the Office.
Really, really funny. Yeah.
His character from The Office was
yeah.
the best.
Yeah. I love all of them.
Not The Office. I'm sorry. It's Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah, Parks and Rec.
I know what I'm talking about. I just don't say it correctly. Don't jump down my throat. I know it's Parks and Rec.
But, you know, I watch those little, like, tidbits between him and Anna Faris and their adorable little son. It's just like...
So stupid
cute. Oh, they're so cute. But, yeah, that's so funny because I was having this conversation with Dan and I said the same thing and he told me Chris Hemsworth for himself. And then I was just like, I think Kalina's going to say that, too.
Or Chris Evans. No one likes him.
No, I love him. I said, but if we had to go on looks alone, it would be Chris Evans for me.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
He's too pretty.
He's very pretty.
He's like too perfect pretty.
Oh, he is.
You're not perfect. But no, Chris Hemsworth is like sexy.
I mean, I want them in different. Like if I had to choose, it would be Kevin from Ghostbusters.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Like, that's the Chris Hemsworth I want. That's the one
that's
I
the
want.
That's the Hemsworth. Not Thor. I don't really... I'm not attracted to Thor, right?
Me
I think
either.
It's the beard on him. Yes. And I fucking love beards. I love them. Beards are hot. But I don't like him. Like, in Thor... I mean, he's fine, but I just don't find him that attractive when he's playing Thor.
And I think, for me, it's more because he is standing next to Captain America, so I have to go with Captain America. You know?
Really? In that movie, for me, it's Hawkeye.
No, yes.
In those movies, right?
No, if it was between all of them, it would be...
It's Renner. What's his name?
No, Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Okay. Well, that was fun. Little story. I didn't see that coming. But we should get down to the book now. So for this podcast, we read Inked, which was a compilation book. It had four short stories in it by different authors. The first short story was called Skin Deep, and it's by Karen Chance. We're going to go through real quick, short little synopsis on each one before we kind of dive into, like, comparing them and talking about the stories as wholes. But it's a real quick story about Leah. She is a half-magical person.
She's half wolf.
Half werewolf, but she's also half wizard or something.
She's like, got wizard magic. Powers.
Mage. I think they use mage in this book. They use different terms in all of the stories, so it gets confusing.
Yes.
But so she's a mage, and she works for the like police of the society, which is called the Corps. And she's also half wolf. And it turns out that her mated wolf partner has been kidnapped. So this story is her getting, like, trying to figure that out. His brother, who's the head of all the werewolf clans, comes to her and tells her that he thinks she can find him because they are linked. And she doesn't believe him because she didn't think that that was possible for her, because she has this weird condition that means she actually, while being born of a werewolf mother, can't actually accept the change. It's almost like a disease. They touch on it very briefly. So she doesn't really think she can be part wolf. And when she finds out she's linked to him, she, like, uses these visions and tracks him through. They're in Las Vegas. And apparently the tunnels under the city are used by the magical creatures and folk of this world as places to hide out. And a lot of unseemly things happen down there. So she goes down there. She fights a bunch of bad wolves, Vargulfs, which are wolves that have been kicked out of their clans. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to track them down. There's the tattoo piece of this story is there are wards that you get on your skin, like tattoos, but they can peel off. So they're like created, they're magical wards that do something. They have some kind of purpose. She has an owl that she wears all the time that helps her like see in the dark and is kind of a totem protective owl for her. At the beginning of the story, she has this weird dragon that gets stuck on her when she's trying to take it off of a bad guy, and that her and her fellow cops can't seem to get it off her. And so she wears it for the rest of the book, and it ends up saving her life at the end of the book. So this tattoo like has powers, and it senses her as the owner of it, and it kind of comes together and saves her. She ends up challenging the bad wolf who was killing off other werewolves and taking their powers. Because if you kill a living creature, you can take its essence and turn it into the... Shit, I just forgot. Into the ward. You can turn it into the ward. Once it powers the ward, you have the strength of that additional life. And so this guy had killed 4 wolves to have extra power. He was going to take over the werewolf clans. So he was a bad dude. She tracked him down and actually sicked all the wards on him. Because mm-hmm. they are taken from a real-life person who's been killed. They were able to turn against him and kill him themselves. So, and in the end, she finds her mate and saves him and saves the day. So Leah's pretty kick-ass. She's a kick-ass cop with magic.
Yeah.
So that's the first story. And then the second story in the book is called Armor of Roses. It's a Hunter Kiss novella. It's by Marjorie Liu. And it's the story of Maxine Kiss, who... Oh, it's complicated. So she's the most current in a long line of women in her family who have this strain. It's a power, it's an obligation, it's really just a mantle that they wear that they can't take off, and it passes from woman to woman in each generation. And what it is she's the warden of a prison for demons. So there's this interdimensional prison where all the demons live, and she's basically the guard at the door, but it's like a physical thing. So she has these 5 little demons that during the day sleep on her skin and make her impervious. She cannot be killed. She cannot be shot or stabbed, or all bullets would bounce off her. But even if they were to like lock her up in a dungeon and starve her to death, the demons would feed her. I mean, it's the fucking coolest. It's so cool. And then during the night, the demons come off and they wander around and like do funny things, like eat syringes and like bring her food and like talk to her and like sing her songs in her hair. Like 2 of them like this curl up in her hair.
There were 5 of them. They all have weird names. I know. And they eat syringes like them. Popcorn and so, and she pets them and
they sing Bryan Adams songs in her ear.
I know, and they speak broken English. It's just awesome.
Oh, it's fucking great. It's such a good book. But so she is on a mission to find this guy, shows up on her doorstep practically like in front of her car and dies and says, you have to save them. You have to save them. And he knows her name. And so she goes on this, she like looks him up. She finds a picture of her grandmother in World War II in Shanghai, China, and with a note to her on the back of it typed in that says, please save them all. She goes to New York and meets who she thinks is one of the people from
the group that
she's investing, like that the guy who just died is part of this group of 4 children, but they were children in Shanghai during World War II, and now they're, you know, 60-year-old adults, but she's trying to save them, and in the end, she gets zapped back to Shanghai. She has this magical glove thing on her hand that has powers and can send her across time and space. So it sends her to 1944 Shanghai, and she meets her grandmother, who at the time is only 17, and they have to take on this woman known as the Black Cat. She is a tattooed lady who is using tattoos to bind people to her, because she's actually housed by, she houses a parasite demon. So in this world, there are people who have demon blood, demonic blood in them, and if they choose, they can end up housing a parasite, and then the demon does a bunch of bad things. She's one of those, and she's housing a really bad demon called Black Cat, and so she's doing all this stuff in China. She's, you know, into like doing pornography and doing drug running and selling children and just like really horrible stuff in the middle of a war zone, which is extra terrible. And Maxine and her grandmother end up having to take her on, and they don't kill her per se, but they exorcise the demon and they free the children, and so they're no longer enslaved. And then she comes back to her real time and finds out that she did make a difference. She saved Ernie's life, and the demons had really kind of let this happen. They wanted her to go back because her grandmother needed her. She'd lost her mom really young, and so she wasn't really doing her job. She wasn't being as good. Like, this position, while it seems weird because it's all demonic and has to do with housing demons in jail, it's actually a position of good and heart. Mm-hmm. Because in the world, you can see these parasites that are on people, and she's supposed to exorcise them, and she's supposed to do things for good, even though she's walking around with demons on her the whole time. So
but they're
so,
cute, adorable.
They're fucking adorable. So she goes back, she meets her grandmother, she gives her grandmother, like, the pep talk she needs to become the awesome woman she becomes later in life, so... Yeah, and again, that one with the tattoos, it's kind of tied through because the demons show up as tattoos on her skin during the day, so she has to, like, keep covered up because she looks really, like, completely head-to-toe tattooed. And then also the woman that she has to defeat is tattooed and is using tattoos as a link to bind souls to her. So,
yeah. Yeah. All right, so the third one is called Etched in Silver by Yasmin Gilmore. And this one stars Camille D'Artigo. And she's got the power of a moon witch. And she's half human and half fae. Is that what her her dad is?
Okay. Yeah, he's a fairy or a fae.
So she meets a Svartan. Okay, just to preface this one. There
all
are
the
some
words.
Really difficult.
So tough.
words in this so whole little novella. I mean, everything. And it's cool because, like, they're in a different world. They're not on Earth.
They're not on Earth in this
They're
one.
Not in,
this
in our dimension.
This is an alternate realm.
They don't have cell phones. She talks about her human mother once told her about cell phones.
She uses a lot of slang that all the fae are like, what?
What is that?
Because her mom used it around her as a kid. Mm-hmm. So she's picked up funny words.
So she meets a Svartan named Trillian, who is... also a fae?
Yeah, he's a fae.
Okay, but he's a certain
he's
type.
A charming
he's
fae.
A charming fae. That's what it is. I was getting a lot of these confused with
it's very things. Hard. And oftentimes, fae is just a like blanket name for fairy.
Yes.
And it's interchangeable because sometimes people will be called fae. Sometimes they'll be called fairies. Sometimes they'll be called, there's another one, the she.
Oh,
like if you refer to them as the she. There's so much lore around fairy folk.
And pixie. Yeah. Tinkerbell.
Right.
And so Camille is an agent for the Illustrial Intelligent Agency, and she's looking for a murderous raper named Roach.
I think Roche. So. I'm pretty sure it's just Roach.
I
read it as Roach.
I am
the whole
saying
time.
Roach because
it's not spelled like the cockroach,
no.
But it is.
R-O-C-H-E.
He's a gross dude. Let's say he's Roach.
And I picture him. He almost looks like a human roach, but
pretty much.
Yeah. So she's looking for this guy so that she can, you know, bring him in. She's an agent of the YIA. And her boss is this prick that is trying to set her up to fail, pretty much. Her and her sisters work for this organization. And
she's cops, too.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like a cop, basically.
She's basically like... So she meets Trillian at a bar, and she's not quite sure about him. And at this point, like, in the very beginning, she's pretty much like, I haven't had sex in a really long time. I'm really horny. I just want to fuck anything. So she meets Trillian, and he's just like this gorgeous, gorgeous... Faye, who she knows he's trying to be charming and everything because they are known for just being promiscuous and things. So she doesn't
well,
really
know. Well,
this
particular branch of fae
yes.
is extra known for it.
Yes.
Because they're charming. So mm-hmm. they have, like, sex magic. I think at one point they called it sex magic.
I think they do. I think they do. So, and so he helps her try to trap Roach. At some point there becomes an indecent proposal with Roach, and then she she is the bet that he loses, that Trillian loses to Roach, and so they try to trap him, and they do. Roach catches them, and then they go on this chase into a different dimension, and but she comes back, and Trillian helps her. And this whole time that they're, you know, chasing Roach down, they're flirting, and they want to bone and everything like that, but they're on a mission.
Yeah, sexual tension is high.
Yeah, so in the end they actually catch Roach, they finally get him, her boss lays off of her. Yeah, pretty much. Towards the end they're like, we're gonna in a sense get married, but it wasn't called marriage, it was a unity that they needed to go to a chapel for, that they met with
priestess
fae goddess of passion and love. They stand at the altar and they go through the process butt ass naked. They're completely naked through this whole process. And the way that they steal their unity is to pretty much bone for the first time. They have to have sex. And so before that happens, they're painted all over their bodies in this beautiful silver paint. Yeah, in runes. Just everywhere. Just everywhere.
Literally.
And when they finally start to have sex to bond, the paint transforms into the tattoo. So that's where the tattoo comes in this story. So they're, you know, they're both feeling a ton of pain and satisfaction at the same time.
Yeah.
So they're in a great deal of pain because they're pretty much getting a full body tattoo all at once while boning for the first time, and it's just like amazing. So yeah, they're boning and they can't stop because apparently if you stop while you're boning and this unity is happening, it can kill
them. It's like a bonding ceremony.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they like, there's some fae folklore that if a charmed fae meets another that is the, if the meshing is so powerful. It was a really confusing.
Yeah, it was,
basically, a silver chain started to connect the two of them.
Yes.
A visible silver magical chain. So
they
knew that they were going to be bonded for life. It's something you cannot undo. So they went through the ceremony. And now they are forever bonded.
Mated. Forever. So, yeah. So that's that story.
They won the day. Yeah.
Yep. And then finally, the last one is called Human Nature by Eileen Wilkes. And she prefaces this part of the story that it's part of the Lupus series, so if any of you are familiar with that, then you probably know this better than we do. I would have to say that this is probably the most prudest out of all of the novellas. So Lily Yu and Rule are the main characters of this book. Lily Yu is an FBI agent, and Rule is her wolf pair, and they've already mated for life, and they, you know, wherever one goes in, the other one has to go. So Rule is part of the Nokolai clan, and he gets a call from his dad and says, hey, one of your friends, Stephen Hilliard, was murdered. You should come back home and see what's going on. So Lily takes on the case, and they go through the process of interviews and things like that. And so the most telling thing about this whole case is that when Steve was murdered, there was a tattoo that was placed across his neck. And in this world, anytime there was a, like, a tattoo, there is magic involved. So that's the biggest clue that they find out, is that they have to find out who tattooed Steve and why he was killed. So she goes on and she rescues a younger wolf who was taken into custody because of the police chief there really hates wolves, and so she has to go and save him because they were ready to shoot him on the spot because they can protect humans. But while he was in custody, he turned into a wolf to protect himself. So at this point, they're like, we can shoot him dead because he's actually not a human right now. And she's like, fuck you, that is not happening. So she goes in, she's wearing Rule's jacket so that the wolf can smell him, and so that she could he knows we're safe here, we're in good company. And so she rescues him and she brings him out of jail. All in all, they find out that a woman by the name of Adele Blanco, who is a business owner of really crappy metaphysical things for witchcraft and voodoo and stuff like that, like in a gift shop.
She sells trinkets.
Yeah, she has trinkets and she just collects things and sells things. But she uses the tattoos as magics to, you know, she's looking to kill more people. And so Lily has to try to stop her. And so with a little bit of investigation, she figures it out and brings her down. And this Adele has what they're calling gifts. I guess that's what the powers are. It's the gift. And she's got the gift of earth. So she's able to move earth around. So she's like an earthbender. If you guys know that, familiar with that term, she's an earthbender. And so she, during the battle scenes there, she's moving earth and throwing rocks at them. So, and she has a gun, so she doesn't have magic powers unless it has something to do with the tattoo. So that's pretty much it on that one. And that's
They save the day and
they go back to
being FBI agents or yeah, whatever.
And bestiality, apparently. That's brought up a little bit. So I'm curious to know now if they actually do it while he's in wolf form.
Oh,
he does. He's like, we just had a bit of bestiality there last night and you're ignoring it. And she's like, I gotta catch a killer.
Yeah, that's an odd thought.
Yeah, so that's the gist of each one of those books, and Kalina and I are really in love with the second one. It was great writing and the storylining.
Oh my god, it was so good.
I want five little demons of my own.
Oh my god, they're the best.
Like, if they want to eat all of my kids, you know, metal trucks, go for it, because they're annoying as hell.
Armor of Roses, that was definitely the best book. Mm-hmm. I was really torn on this. Because I really did like reading the different stories, like just getting quick snapshots from different authors and with completely different plots and character lines and ideas. But like I had said in the last book that we read, the last Lord of the Underworld book, I was a little bit disappointed because it seemed like it was a long time for any, you know, sex or anything really romantic to happen. And really,
nothing. Except for
there's only the third book. Third story is the only one that has some pretty like hot action. Like, and throughout the book, there's so much sexual. Or throughout that story, there's so much sexual tension between the two characters. The first one has a little bit because while Leah is using these visions from Cyrus to find him, the visions that he's sending her are old memories, and it's like the memories of their first time having sex and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of heat in that one, but they're real quick short flashbacks that she experiences, and then she keeps going through like a tunnel full of, you know, sewage, so that's not sexy, and you're like, well, I'm confused.
Yeah,
and then there's like nothing in the second story. Even though I love the second story, I was like, well, Grant and Maxine could have had sex at some point. It would have been nice.
I think they did. There was a hint like that night
that she's like, you have 10 minutes to show me how much you want me to be safe, and then like it cut to the next morning. Yeah, I was like, well, boo.
Yeah.
Okay. But that story was definitely the best written. I really think Marjorie Liu is a fantastic writer, because not only is the concept so unique and like just really interesting, this idea that you wear demons on your skin during the day that make you impervious to injury and death, and then at night they come alive and like run around and do things.
Things for you, and they watch TV.
They watch softcore porn a lot and like eat the heads off teddy bears. And I fucking love that. Just the description of these guys makes them sound just awesome.
Oh, I know.
So I do want to look into her and this series, because obviously she wouldn't create this whole story just for 100-page novel novella.
Right.
She'd have to have more to it. So I just think that's fascinating. That's a fascinating world.
The first book, the way that she wrote it, was kind of interesting, too, with she writes
that's,
it in...
Karen Chance.
Yeah, Karen Chance. So she writes it in... the main story in first person, so Leah is talking about the story, but then when she has her flashbacks, would that be considered second person, third person? I don't know, because he's telling the story, but you can obviously tell when it is that, you know. But,
yeah, I don't know which person it is, and I'm not great on that. But it is, it comes from it, because she's seeing it, but she's seeing his memories of the night, and so it's not, the actions are the same, but to like see it from his perspective with his feelings is something she'd never experienced before.
Yeah.
So that is an interesting. I did like that story too, because one thing, you know, from all of these were all female character driven short stories. They were all like, the main character is the female character, and she is a badass in every one of these.
Yeah.
She is really, like, three of them, they basically are police officers, FBI officers, or whatever version of
some type of agent of...
agent of the state.
Yeah, of law. Agents of law.
And they, you know, carry weapons and they protect themselves. I mean,
they're badass.
Honestly, Leah in the first story shouldn't be alive.
Yeah,
like, there was so much damage done to her over the course of what could only have been, like, 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this chick should be dead. Like, at the very first, you know, little battle she gets into, she gets bit on the arm by a werewolf.
Yeah.
And it's, like, has to tie her arm back together. And she continues to, like, get drugged through waterlogged tunnels.
She almost drowns.
I'm like, you now have sepsis. You're disgusting. You have open wounds in a sewer. You're just going to die. I just don't know how you're supposed to survive that.
Oh, that's so funny.
But, I mean, she keeps getting beat up and shot mm-hmm. at, and wolves keep attacking mm-hmm. her, and magic yeah. and shit.
She goes through a lot.
She fucking kills it, though.
Yeah,
she does. Really appreciated her. I liked her a lot.
Granted, the fight scene that she was supposed to have in the end with
Gray Skull, something. That's not Gray Skull. That's like from Thundercats.
I keep trying to say Grayscale, but that's from Game of Thrones.
Gray Shadow.
That's his name.
You don't know things.
It's actually the tattoos or the wards. Well, the ones. I mean, she had no fear. She was like, I'm gonna battle you, and we're gonna do this.
She challenged
him, and once you challenge, they accept it's on. You cannot back from it. Yes. But
she kind of was hoping that that's how it would go mm-hmm. down. That the wards, that she'd be able to trick him into using the wards, mm-hmm. and they would then attack him and mm-hmm. kill him. Because she did know without that she wasn't going to be able to win.
Right.
I mean, he's a full-grown werewolf, and she's not. She mm-hmm. is only, I mean, she has werewolf ancestry, but like we said, she can't make the change.
Right.
So she is only as strong as her magic, and she'd already burnt her magic all mm-hmm. out that day. So mm-hmm. she had no more magic left. She had no more portions left. No more, like, her coat, which is impervious to things, was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think her bike blew up. I don't know. Shit like that. I mean, literally, she'd lost everything.
She had to tase
her own boyfriend to keep him from trying to come with her. She tased Cyrus and sent him to a hospital, and then
the
she attacked.
Stick. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And even the dragon was dead by that point. I mean, not dead, but had used up its power yep. reserves and had gone
she
still.
She was pretty much just a walking.
So she was like, if he doesn't use the wards, and if the wards don't kill him, then I'm dead.
She was the squib in a battle of
magic. At
this
point, yeah. Taking on Voldemort.
Yeah, exactly.
It was about that powerful, but
yeah.
She's a pretty cool character, and I'd like to hear more of her stories.
Yeah.
And then Maxine.
Maxine doesn't need to learn how to fight. She really doesn't. She's got the demons to. I mean, the only time she's vulnerable is at night when they're not in her skin.
There's
a point in time, I can't remember.
It is at night, because they're not on her, but they will protect her. Like, because if she dies, they die.
They die, too. So they have to, yeah.
So they protect her because they can only live on her bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And she has no children yet. She has to have a daughter. And once she has a daughter, then it's a ticking clock on her life. Because it seems like there's a point at which the demons decide that they need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems kind of arbitrary. We get just a little hint of the story of her great-grandmother, where the great-grandmother was... They went to China, and she was trying to help the people in China, and the demons thought that this wasn't safe because she had a daughter who was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And the demons can't really protect the daughters yet. They can only protect the one they're living on mm-hmm. at the time, which is the mother. And so the demons tried to get her to move on and to go somewhere safer with her daughter, and she didn't listen to them.
Yeah.
And so they left her. And once they leave you and move on to the next generation, they mm-hmm. can't come back, and now you don't have your protection. So at 11, the demons moved on to Maxine's grandmother and...
Jean.
Then shortly thereafter, Jean's mother died.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like the demons kind of are like... Obviously, you know, they don't want to move on to someone too young because it would be harder to protect if they moved on to a baby.
Right.
That baby's not going to understand anything, and it's going to be real fucked up.
They're level-headed demons.
So, but it does seem like if they feel like it's a choice between mm-hmm. staying with a mom and potentially losing their next generation that they need to live on eventually, or moving on and protecting that generation, they'll leave the mom.
Yeah.
So all of these women in this line have lost their mothers at pretty young ages.
Yeah.
Maxine, it seems like, lost hers around 22 or so, because mm-hmm. she's been with her 5 years without her mother, and she's 27 now. So that's not childhood, but most of us don't lose our moms at 22, so it still would be traumatic. And to just know, you know, she never met her grandmother.
Right.
Like, grandmothers are already dead by the time mm-hmm. grandchildren are born.
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird idea.
It's really interesting. I really like how she placed it together. And the cool thing, another cool thing that I thought that she put into this storyline was that, you know, when you go back into time, obviously, you can't make too many changes because then you alter history.
Yeah.
And they were in the middle of World War II. So I was just like, wow, this is going to be so cool. But she was really good at just kind of steering clear from it. And even Jean was like, so how does this end? You know, she wants to know. She was like, Maxine's like, I can't tell you.
Well,
but she does say,
good.
It's going to be okay.
Well, that and there was the story of apparently Jean was in one of the atomic bombs. This would have been later in the war. Maxine mentioned that her grandmother was there, I think, for Hiroshima.
Yes.
And because she had the demons, they covered her skin and she ran out.
Yep.
But she got fucking atomic bombed. Yeah. And so, and Maxine couldn't tell her mom, like, well, you're going to go back to Japan at some point and get an A-bomb dropped on your ass. So she had to keep that secret, which would have been real hard, because I'd be like, stay clear of Japan.
I know, right?
Shit's going down.
Tell all your friends.
Get out now.
Oh my God.
Like, but speaking of that idea of loss of mothers, all of these women have lost their mother.
They were
and
all
every
motherless.
Single one of these stories.
They were like Disney princesses.
They were Disney fucking princesses of the paranormal.
Yes.
None of them had their moms.
This is just an interesting way to set up a character. It does make you want to either fight for something you've never had or look for something that you are longing for.
I think it set up a lot of strong. I think that was used by the authors as a device to create strong women who needed to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all these women were pretty independent. Camille at one point was like, I'll never get married. I'm too independent for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, by 50 pages later, she's fucking doing a bonding ceremony with Trillian.
With someone who
she met literally 3 days before.
And this is, like, a lifetime. Like, this magical bonding shit that happens with all of these.
You can't
go on to the next person. Nope. It's not like human marriage where that's obviously... Okay, I don't want to talk shit about it because I believe in the sanctity of marriage. I am married. But
I'll talk shit about marriage.
We can go and just do whatever and break that invisible tie that's supposed to be the knot that binds you together. But in the magical world, you physically can't do it.
Yeah.
So for her to just be like, let's do this.
Yeah.
After meeting Trillian for 2 minutes and then...
Seriously, I think it was 4 days total.
Yeah. No,
it was
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah. So they all of them have no mothers, and then they go on to be pretty strong, independent women, but they also end up all of them mated.
Yes.
They're all mated. Well, they don't really use mated for Maxine and Grant, but they are obviously like soulmates, because she's the only one that can be around him when he's doing his like weird aura thing.
Yeah. And the demons
like
protect
Grant.
Him in
they protect
some
Grant.
Form. They
can't think they know
do.
That he's going to be the eventual father of the next generation that they need to live on. So they're like, dude.
Yes.
Dude.
Mm-hmm. So all of these stories, I mean, the book itself is called Inked.
Yes.
So, you know, we're focusing on
all sexy
the topics
tattoos.
Of sexy tattoos. And so that's the main topic that we wanted to touch on and stuff like
all
that.
All these tattoos were on their women, though. And I find, I mean, that's fine. I have tattoos. I'm not against women tattoos, but I find men's tattoos very sexy.
Well, the Lord's tattoos.
The Lord's have tattoos. That's from our first book.
Yeah. Their tattoos are...
Sexy.
Yeah, and if you've
tattoos
got it,
are pretty fucking
you know,
sexy.
Great imagination. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. They're totally sexy.
Mm.
And I hate the misnomers and the prejudices and all of that comes with it. You know, it's such a faux pas. And, you know, if it's a cultural thing, fine. If it's a belief thing, fine and stuff like that. But I don't really think that... Nobody has that right to judge people because of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think it's changing. It's getting there. It's getting better. I mean, there was definitely a time where the only people with tattoos, like, I think for, like, our parents' generation almost, like, the only people who had tattoos were either they had been in the service, like, one of the army or the military or of some sort, because there was tattoos there. And then, other than that, they were the, like, lower echelons of society.
Sure.
Like, people who were outcasts of some
gang
sort.
Gang members.
Gang members.
Prisoners.
Gang prisons. You know, people who lived on the fringes and didn't have your typical job, you know, daily job, daily life. So those were the ones who were associated with tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
But now, fucking everyone.
Everyone's got
all
them.
Of us have
all
tattoos.
All of us got them.
So we're definitely bringing it more into the mainstream. And it's harder to make it seem like it's something that only people of lower quality have now. It's like, it's just a thing. It's just, it's decoration. And it's my life and my body. And I put decoration on it. That's my choices. And it doesn't speak about my character in any way.
No, not at all. And it's, I will reap it when I am 80 years old. But who cares?
I know,
80.
That's such an odd concept. Like, that's people's argument is like, you're gonna regret that when you're 80. I'm like, am I gonna regret having something done that I enjoyed for 80 years?
Right.
Because my already decrepit body that is wrinkly and gross now has a tattoo on it? Like, won't I be just more upset that I'm 80?
That I'm just, like,
Like, I think I'll have other regrets, thank you. I don't think the tattoo's gonna be high on them.
It's so true.
Because if you don't regret it, like, almost immediately after doing it, I don't think you're gonna regret it when you're 80.
Yeah. And they've got technology to remove it anyway. Yeah, and so I mean, you really do want it gone.
If you do regret it, you can do
it. You can get it removed.
But yeah. Other than that, who gives a fuck when you're 80? Like, that's such a lame argument.
You shouldn't. I got my first tattoo from a homemade handgun. Not handgun. That was stupid. A homemade drill. I don't know why I said handgun.
I know. I pictured you getting shot. I was like, what? Sounds terrible.
A homemade drill with, I don't even know what kind of ink, but I was 12 years old when I got my first, and it's supposed to be. It doesn't really look like it anymore, and it didn't at first either.
No, it's weird.
It's a heart with an arrow through it. It's on my left hand between my thumb and my pointy finger. And it's been 20 years since I've had this tattoo. Yeah. I could get it removed. I don't think I'm that attached to it, but at this point, I'm like, I don't really care, you know? I've got three other tattoos besides of that. Four other tattoos. I forgot all my tattoos.
I don't know anymore.
I don't know how many I've got.
Well, half of them are behind you.
That's true. But I've got an interesting story to tell since we're talking about tattoos and faux pas and things like that. So my niece, my oldest niece, who's going to be 21 years old this Saturday. She's going to be 20 fucking 1 years old. She was an adult 3 years ago.
3 years ago, yeah.
And, you know, she grew up in a pretty religious family and everything, which is fine.
Mormons.
They're Mormons. I love my sister. And this is the sister I was talking about back in the other podcast about her not wanting her daughter to follow my ways. So her mom finds out that she's got this tattoo or this other tattoo. I don't know. At this point, I think Jasmine's got more tattoos than I do. But then her mom figures it out, or like finds it out, and she sees this tattoo on her leg, and she calls her a whore and doesn't talk to her for 2 days. And then when she finally talks to her, she doesn't say sorry or anything. She just goes about her day. So now I want to know why. Like, why? Just because your kid, who is a good kid, she is a good kid. She was a typical girl. She was a typical teenager who was, like, having issues with boyfriends and things like that. Because that's what typical teenagers go through.
Being a teenager sucks.
Yeah.
It's the worst period of time.
It does, you know? And whether or not I had that influence on her about the tattoo, which, I mean, I may have. And so what if I did? No. She's not getting a tattoo and then, you know, giving hand jobs on the side of the road. for something later. She's not a horrible kid. She's not a horrible person. You know, she does what she needs to do as a regular young adult. It really made me mad when she told me about it. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting. So
yeah, there's no correlation there. You could have tattoos and be innocent.
Yeah, exactly.
You can not have tattoos and be a person who has lots and lots of sex.
Right. Or murders people. Well, you know? Okay. Like, I'm going to go all the extreme.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's unfortunate that she has to go through that. And that's her mother, you know. And my mom obviously didn't approve of my tattoos when I had gotten them. Especially this one that I got at 12. But she never, not once ever told me I was anything less than her daughter. About anything. So even though I've got these markings of flowers and a cat and this weird heart with an arrow through it, she has never belittled me and told me that I'm going to be something less or called me a whore just because I got a little bit of ink. Yeah. I'm still who I am. Yeah. One of my cousins a long time ago told me that her mom told her and a couple of my other cousins that I am the reason that the rest of my girl cousins have tattoos. I started that trend. And now they're all bad girls like me. I'm a bad person. I influence bad decisions.
It's so silly. They were likely to end up with them anyway. I think just generational.
Sure.
I don't know a lot of people our age that don't have tattoos at this point.
No, it's true. It's true.
I mean, not that you don't have to have one, but no, I'm just saying it's just like so likely that even if you never had them that your cousin still would. So to use that as a... But I mean, I understand that. My family did not hate them. My family hates tattoos. And growing up, so my grandfather and my father didn't really ever get along. They had a really strained relationship, but they both were in the Navy. My grandfather had been in the Navy in World War II, and he got a Navy tattoo on his arm and apparently hated it. like, hated it for the rest of his life. And the only piece of advice that my father ever took from my grandfather was not to get a tattoo. Because other than that, my dad, like, pretty much broke all advice that my grandfather gave him. Like, he had his long hair, like a hippie, and all kinds of crazy shit. But so he went into the Navy, and my grandfather was like, don't get a tattoo. It's the worst thing I've ever done. So my dad followed his advice and never got a tattoo and said it was the best decision he ever made to not have a tattoo. So this is, like, ingrained story from childhood. Like, I was told it from age one and up, like, don't get a tattoo. It's the only thing I never did and I'm happy about it. And whatever. You'd think that would stick. No, it doesn't fucking stick. So it
makes you want it more.
Oh, fuck yeah. I already wanted it. Like, I wanted a tattoo. I was just like, I don't care. Because actually, that's a story about absence. So you can't know that you would hate a tattoo. You just think you made the right decision because you don't have one.
Right.
Like, you can't know. You can't prove a negative.
Exactly.
Right? So he doesn't know that he would also have hated a tattoo just because his father hated a tattoo. So I was like, well, I can't take your word that I will hate tattoos.
Right.
So as soon as I went to Finland as a teenager on an exchange program for a year in high school and walked into a tattoo shop and was like, I'm 18, I swear. Tattoo me. Like, the minute I got out of my parents' house, I was only 17. Mm-hmm. I was not 18. And I, like, got away from them for 1 year and tattooed myself. And then my mom came to visit in Finland, and I tried so hard to hide it. I was wearing socks all the time. It was the summer, and I was still wearing, like, socks and jeans every day. And then one day we were in a hotel. We were out traveling, and I was going to take a shower, and I had to run back into the room to get some, like, shampoo or something that I'd forgotten. And as I walked past, she saw it on my ankle and just,
like, a hawk.
Like, yeah, fucking out of nowhere saw this tiny little tattoo on my ankle and, like, jumped on me and was like, what's that?
Oh my God. And then
the rest of the family made fun of, because I was the first one in my family.
Wow.
Like on my mom's side, none of them had tattoos. None of my cousins who are older than me, no one did. And then my older cousin and I, we went and got tattoos together in honor of our grandmother when she turned for her 80th birthday. And then the family couldn't say shit because I got grandma's, you know, own artwork tattooed on my leg. You can't fucking say shit about that.
Yeah.
What are you going to make fun of? Like, don't judge that.
It's adorable.
It's the fucking best.
Yeah.
I fucking love that tattoo.
I have a cousin who's got a fucking sleeve. They're gorgeous tattoos.
Gorgeous.
Of Disney princesses.
If I liked my arms, I would get sleeves, but
I don't like my arms, that's why I want to get sleeves.
That's an interesting thing. I don't like my arms, but I don't want to draw attention to them with sleeves, so then I won't get sleeves.
We're the opposite.
Ideas on how to get and why to get sleeves or not to.
Because I like the half sleeve idea.
Definitely. Yeah, not necessarily to my wrist, but just I want more. I definitely do. I think the only saving grace is that they're not cheap.
That's true.
If they were cheap, it would be a real problem.
Yeah. So another thing about tattoos that I wanted to just to touch on and to get a little bit personal again. In my younger years, in my 20s, and this started when I was in middle school, but I facilitated a Cambodian dance troupe and we performed a lot of traditional and classical Cambodian dances. And so as the years went on, I started to perform a lot more, and then I brought in a lot more people to join my troupe. So we would perform for Cambodian New Year in April, and we would do it at our temple. And the costumes aren't skimpy or anything like that, but you do show a little bit of arm and a little bit of neck. And my dancers eventually, as I started to bring them together, and I didn't think anything of this because I really didn't think it was a problem. My dancers had tattoos, and, you know, I have tattoos on my shoulder and the back of my neck. I don't have any on my arm, but I had one dancer who had a sleeve, and then as they got older, they just became more tattooed. I have another dancer who's got a whole tattoo, her whole back is tattooed with Apsara dancers, which are Cambodian dancers.
Oh my God, that's so cool!
And they're gorgeous, gorgeous tattoos. But the elders and the monks, respectfully, they did not like the tattoos. And they did tell me, you guys cannot perform these traditional dances with tattoos on. So I had to respect that. And I hated it because I'm like, why? Because they weren't against tattoos. They were just against tattoos on girls. Because the monks have tattoos.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got, like Sanskrit and, like, Uncle Wat and different things on there. So, like, there's prayers and... I get that. There's nothing wrong with the ink.
Religious meanings.
Yeah. And I do understand why some people would think that seeing those tattoos are not very beautiful on classical dances. And I did not see it that way. I thought, my dancers are great. They're gorgeous. They're gorgeous girls. And they dance well. So it's like, okay, well, now Sorry, you cannot do this dance unless you're wearing a long sleeve costume. Sorry, you can't do this dance because you've got tattoos there. I can't allow it. We're being supported by our community and by our temples and stuff like that, and this is a sign of disrespect. So unfortunately, that was something that we had to conform to.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's tough. But I think even that will eventually slowly change.
I hope so, because I don't think we can find dancers without tattoos. Well,
exactly that. And you're the next generation of Cambodian culture, and you want to maintain that culture, mm-hmm. you know, don't lose it. And if that means tattooed dancers, then it means tattooed dancers. Yeah. Isn't that better than no dancers?
Right, right.
Like, if those are your choices mm-hmm. in this particular area, you know, in Denver or whatever, that you know, if you can't find a bunch of young Cambodian women who mm-hmm. do not have tattoos, then lose the culture.
Aside from one, these were all Cambodian tattoos. Mm-hmm. It's just
yours ironic. Have your name in Cambodian mm-hmm. and your lotus flowers.
Yeah, it's just the irony of it. It's like,
yeah, it is, because it goes back to that stigma that, you know, women are supposed to be something different. Like, you know, we're still fighting mm-hmm. that. We're still kind of breaking mm-hmm. it. That's why I really loved all these stories that these women, like three of them, were official members of police forces, mm-hmm. which is still statistically few.
Sure.
You know, that's still a branch of work that women have broken into, but it's still mm-hmm. predominantly male field. So it's really neat to see that these main characters are investigators and police forces, and then...
And that their male counterparts are just sidekicks.
They are. They're just like this wolf sidekick or this, you know, like...
Fae sidekick
who doesn't have authority. Right, it's and so she's awesome. Got all the power and she's got the badge and mm-hmm. she can kick your ass. I mean, and so it's still part... Like, I liked that in these stories because they were tattooed, they mm-hmm. were badass, they had authority and power, and mm-hmm. that was just really neat because... That's where we're kind of striving for in society. Yeah. Even though, I mean, like, the Fae one, the third book. Etched in Silver by Yasmin Gail Norn. I mean, Fae culture still seemed to have a lot of the problems that are present in modern day mm-hmm. real world. Like, there was definite sexism. Like, women mm-hmm. weren't allowed to go into the gambling den. Yes, she had to go only as a male
escort
with a man, like mm-hmm. escorted by mm-hmm. a male. And so obviously there's still shadow, or like, she's still mirroring the mm-hmm. sexism and stuff that exists in our society today. But there's also these ways that they're pushing back on it mm-hmm. in these stories that we can kind of model and push back on it in real life too. It's a good way to like read about stuff like that.
And it's, I mean, more so in our time and present time, obviously it's more accepted and everything, but this is also a book that was written a while ago or a couple years ago.
2010. Yeah. It was published in 2010. So these stories were probably written, mm-hmm. you know, 2009 or so-ish. And yeah, and I thought it actually had some progressive overtones throughout the book that like there were two different separate stories that mentioned homosexual relationships mm-hmm. just passing casually mm-hmm. like, oh, she likes girls. What? And then there was Etched in Silver. Trillian is black.
Yes.
He's ebony. He's an ebony fae with blue eyes and silver hair.
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, because then she explains the... When he starts to glow with the silver paint that's being tattooed on them during the sex scene, he's velvet. Just like, yeah, silver on like velvet.
Black velvet.
And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's interracial. I mean, mm-hmm. one, there's also interspecies because we've got the fae and the humans,
that's
but whatever.
True. Yes.
But this is, it's some form of interracial. So yeah, there was a lot in this series of short stories that I felt like were really kind of progressive and had mm-hmm. like these progressive ties, even if they were very small mm-hmm. and just offhand comments, that's, you know, moving in a nice direction.
Yeah, and actually in the, I believe it's the fourth book, the pair, Lily and Rule, Lily does actually mention that Rule thinks that nowadays a lot of the prejudices are towards the different species that are within the realms and within the different worlds, and that people really aren't prejudiced towards color anymore. But Lily disagreed. She's like, I don't think that's ever gonna go away. She's like, mention that very briefly, and I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she's just like, well, I think we shouldn't have a lot more reason to hate, but we do, since we are interspecies now, and color and race is always going to be a thing, which is unfortunate.
We always have to keep moving forward and being better people to everyone.
Yeah,
I think that's a good storyline.
No, but, absolutely.
So overall, opinion on the book as a whole. What do you think?
So, aside from a few kind of weird things, like, I don't know if I saw typos.
Yeah, no, there were definitely errors.
Yeah, there were some editing errors. There was a point in the first book where she's
first,
like...
First there were three bulls, and then there were four bulls, and then there were three.
Yeah, so we just couldn't figure out how many
bulls within the span of half a page.
Yeah, so the first book, Skin Deep. I think jumping from the Lords of the Underworld series mm-hmm. to this book, I was disappointed at first because I think I really just wanted the sex. That's all I wanted.
Yeah,
I just wanted to know. I was just like, dang it, this is not, what are we trying to read here? We're reading these books for sex. I mean, the storyline was great, and I eventually started to like the book, but then I couldn't get into it.
Yeah. I did like the subtle flashback scenes that she dropped in because they were pretty steamy. They built to steamy. Mm-hmm. They started out as fun and playful, and then they built to full-on intercourse and steam. It was really erotic. And I liked that because they were very short snippets, like dropped in the middle of scenes, and you'd be like, la-da-da-da-da, she's fighting, blah, blah, blah. Oh, sex. And then all of a sudden she'd be back to fighting, and it was like whiplash.
Yeah,
almost.
It was. So
that was kind of an interesting, like mini arousals happening periodically, and you'd be like, what is happening mm-hmm. here, guys? And mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine... I kept trying to think of how that would be on her end.
Yeah.
Like, if you're fighting for your life and all of a sudden you get this flashback your boyfriend's perspective of the first time you had sex.
Yeah.
And he's, like, eating you out and you're like, I couldn't be fighting. I'd be like, and then I got my head chopped off.
Yes.
Because I got distracted thinking about this. So I kept going, this is awkward. And the times that she was experiencing it, I just felt it was, like, really likely to get her killed.
Sure, she had, that's what makes her amazing. She was able to double task.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have been. Because, I'd have been like, what?
Yeah.
Hold on, guys, hold on. I'm getting a vision. Don't chop my head off for a minute.
Wait a minute.
So, I think while it wasn't a lot, and it wasn't overt, but it was used kind of interestingly.
Yes.
It was neat in the way that it was used because it was this connection between the two of them that allowed her to find him. I mean, it didn't, to me, make a lot of sense that was what she was getting.
I didn't think it makes sense to her either because she had no idea what was going on.
She was like,
why?
But somehow these flashbacks of their sex time was allowing her to hone in on this location. I don't know.
I don't get it.
That's how science works, guys. Magic. Sorry, not science. That's how magic works.
That's how magic works.
I was pretty interested, and it's definitely a series I would pick up. And I mean, I don't know that, I can't guarantee I'd read all of them or anything, but I'd like to read a full book by her in this series and see if I liked the characters enough to continue. It was enough of a tease that I was like, yeah, I think I'd like mm-hmm. to be interested in this.
Well, after reading this second novella, which you and I agree, that's our favorite.
Best.
That's the best one.
Oh my God.
So good. I then went back and said, okay, the first one's not so bad because there's no sex in the second one.
No, not even
but
at all.
The storyline was just amazing.
Oh my God, genius.
That was such a major props there. The story, I mean, in just that short.
I can't tell you guys how fucking adorable these demons are.
Yeah, I know, they're so
And how badly you so want cute. Demons after reading
after,
this book. You're like,
yes.
I want demons!
And not all of them talked. It was just Z who spoke for all of them.
Yeah.
But, and he was
well,
like,
some of them
the leader.
Sing and stuff.
That's
and
right,
mutter.
They did sing and mutter.
And talk to each other. Or talk. They have a secret language.
But they're just like cute little
they
creatures
adorable.
That the most endearing thing is that they protect her. I mean, mainly because they have to survive
well, they
themselves
have
to. Too.
But they seem
they
to do
it... love her.
Yeah,
they do love her and her bloodline. And they...
I mean, the whole point was to send her because she has heart,
mm-hmm.
and they needed to send her back to a point in time in her grandmother's history where her grandmother needed that.
Yes.
She needed to learn that heart and become a better person because mm-hmm. she wasn't going to without this help, and it's all weird magical time loopy thing
mm-hmm.
but the demons basically made it happen
because
they knew that without that future heart in the generation
mm-hmm.
then the generation probably had really low chances,
right?
So they needed to fix grandma in order to continue the bloodline.
Yeah, well, the pre-story with great grandma and grandma and how that leads up to why she needs heart, that's
grandma,
a great, like,
so good.
It was just so brilliantly put together.
It's fucking, and then she is the best author of the four.
Yes.
Like, this is well done. The
writing
the
was
writing
great.
Is great. The dialogue is really good. Like, mm-hmm. I like the third book. I mm-hmm. like Etched in Silver. Mm-hmm. But it is not as well written. It's definitely more one of those just, like, quick... Yeah. The dialogue's pretty shallow. Like, you really don't think people would have that dialogue. Like, it's yeah. hard to believe. And I know they're not real people, so maybe...
Yeah.
Maybe fairies would have that dialogue.
A different dimension. Well, and I think that's... Yeah, it made it a little difficult because half of the words in that whole... That, the third book, was...
We're not real words.
We're not real words. They were made of words. And this is, yeah, Etched in Silver by Yasmin.
Gelnorn.
Which, yeah, the storyline was the good there. And I mean, if
and
you
it's
wanted
fun
the
and
sex, this was
oh,
the novella
from
with sex.
Get-go. Yeah. She walks into a bar mm-hmm. wearing, like, next to nothing and is like, I'm horny.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this book's gonna have sex in it.
Yes!
Because she's horny
she
and it is page one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And then the bartender's like, I'll take you home, let's fuck.
Oh, let's talk about how uncomfortable that was.
Oh, the worst. Okay. Oh, actually, that brings up a lot of things.
So okay. just the okay. that we didn't...
What was his name? Jorn?
Jorn. I was saying it like yarn. You know, like the J was a Y.
Yeah,
let's just say
be.
Let's say
jarn. Because there was an R in it.
There's
an R in
yarn.
It. Arn's not a word. Arn or a letter.
But half of these words weren't
anyway.
Words. So
anyway,
the bartender. The bartender who owns this bar.
Who may or may not be named Jarn.
is an old friend of her father's.
He's a friend of her father's.
Her father's. And so she's talking about, which I also think is a little bit weird, openly talking about how she's like, hasn't had sex in a while, and she really needs to just get off and whatever. And he's like, I'll fuck you.
I'll be the best you've ever had.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is a line
I can promise you.
And,
yeah.
Just like, you don't know.
So it's just, yeah, it's uncomfortable, one, because he is her father
and they
friend.
Bring that up a lot
yeah.
and like her sisters even point out like, oh, he's been after you since you hit womanhood, and
yeah.
that's upsetting.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea, and I just like think of all my father's friends and I'm like, no thank you. And then
so
at
funny.
One point, to add to the whole like uncomfortableness, Camille's having a conversation with her father.
Oh,
and they're
yes.
just talking about, like, you know, her mom and the, like, passing
yeah,
and all
yeah,
of
yeah.
that stuff. And he's like, oh, you're just like me. You like sex more than breathing. And I was like, if ever those words came out of my father's mouth towards me, I would need to set the house on fire and we'd all have to die. That's the end of that conversation right the fuck there. I was like, no,
what?
Your father did not just tell you that, even if it is true that you like sex more than breathing, don't point that out, Dad.
No. Dad.
You don't know that.
We should not have this conversation.
You don't need to express that knowledge to me.
At all. And it's funny because we're doing this whole thing for the purpose of talking about sex, but
yeah.
not with your dad.
Not with my
not,
dad.
Not with your dad.
I could literally talk about it with anyone else. Mom, fine. Family, friends.
I could not
strange
talk about
people
it with,
who are going to be listening
right?
to us.
Right, need to, like...
Talk about sex.
Right, people who don't even know. But they're not our dad.
Nope.
They're not
nope.
our dad. I can tell you right now that will never, ever,
never.
Ever be a topic of conversation for my mom or my dad, nope. to tell you the truth. That's another faux pas in the, you know, at least for my family or my, you know, we do not talk about it. I had my period before I learned about my period.
Oh, that's upsetting.
I had my period when I was 9. I started when I was 9.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. I've had it for that long.
Ugh. Real bad for
and,
you.
I know. And I
didn't... have to wait till 12, so.
Really? Oh, mm-hmm. See, if I had just gotten into the preteens, I think I would have been fine. No, I didn't. I just started bleeding one day, and my mom handed me a pad and said, wear this. I thought I was dying. Like, I had no pep talk. My sisters didn't.
Because we wouldn't even have had health class by 9.
Right? No.
We didn't have health class in middle school.
Well, I got the pre-version of it in 5th grade. So it wasn't until 5th grade that I learned about
it. I think so.
It.
That does sound right.
Yeah.
But that was a real lame version.
It was
health
a lame
class
version.
Was at least,
yeah,
like...
health class later in middle school. Yeah. And then it came together and I was like, oh, that's why I die every single month. It's because that's happening. Before,
I'm so,
I had
oh
no
my
idea.
God, I couldn't imagine not knowing about it.
I didn't know. And I mean, I don't blame my mom for it for anything.
No,
you know,
that's
no...
extra challenging
yeah,
with the
so...
cultural differences. Mm-hmm.
And my sisters never did either. They
were both older than you, though. They should have fucking told you.
They should have told me something. They also always just handed a pad over to me and just said, here, use this.
Ugh. I had to teach my college roommate what a tampon was and how to use it. It was not a thing I really wanted. She was from India, just mm-hmm. as reference for why it's
yeah,
not.
Okay, sure.
I mean, it could have happened to an American too. I mean, sure. Obviously, you could come from like a town that maybe you weren't told or a family, but she was from India mm-hmm. and it's extra taboo still there. I mean, they're starting to fight against it, but it definitely mm-hmm. isn't. She was even in a family where you were supposed to go and like sleep in a different part of the house for that week.
Oh.
Because you're dirty and you can't touch any of the
sure.
food. You can't, which fuck that.
Wow.
Fucking noise! Wow. Like, makes me angry just thinking about it. Because I'm just like, there wouldn't be fucking people without that.
Yeah.
So don't go sending women yes. to the fucking corner.
Because yes.
they're able to reproduce, mm-hmm. you assholes. Mm-hmm. Anyway. That's beside the point. So one day, she just, like, found, like, a box of our tampons, because there were three Americans living mm-hmm. with her in a dorm, and she came to me with it, and I think she had, like, the instruction packet,
oh,
and
no.
she was like, what the hell is this? She was very adamant and wanted to know what it was, and
oh.
I was like, I don't want to talk about
how
that.
This work?
But I did, because I was like, well,
sure.
you should know.
Yeah.
And then you were making a choice then, because mm-hmm. she didn't know before, so she didn't get to make the choice of whether she wanted to use
right.
tampons or not. She just only thought pads existed.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I told her, and she was not pleased about that idea. She was, like, horrified about it. And was like, why
what?
Would you put that there? And I was like, well, it's easier. And I like tampons over pads. But that's a choice. It's a personal choice, and you don't have
choice.
To make it.
Yeah.
But don't ask me about it anymore, then.
That's funny you say that, because I actually learned how to use a tampon in high school. I think it was junior year. And Rox, a good friend of mine, Roxanne, showed me. She didn't show me. She explained to me how to use a tampon, which is interesting because we're going to have her as a guest in one of our next
yeah,
upcoming...
Yeah, future episode.
Mm-hmm, because her and I have had some sexcapades, not together, but some really funny stories, and she's hilarious, so I think that one's going to be really fun.
That
but, yeah, she taught me in high school. I think my sisters were already using it, but they were using the ones without the applicator, which I think is why.
Why?
I don't understand.
I love this planet, but fuck it. I'm going to use a plastic applicator.
Yes.
I'm sorry. And
I
hope that
bad.
They're biodegradable, and I hope we can come up
with
some kind of solution to that someday. Yeah. But that's just so fucking easy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've tried even the cardboard ones.
Yes.
The worst.
I hate those.
Go
ones.
Fuck off, Tampax.
But I will take those ones over the...
Still over the non.
The
like the
ones,
OB?
The OB is the one that I know that doesn't have the...
Why? It doesn't work. It immediately turns into a sodden mess that does not go in.
It just... Yeah, and I don't... I mean, no. Yeah, there's just all sorts of...
Again, personal
that.
Preferences may differ.
True.
I don't like yes. those.
Well, have you heard of those period panties?
Yes, thanks.
Yeah, I actually want to try
one. I've been really debating that because I think it's a brilliant idea,
mm-hmm.
except I'm really concerned about washing them.
Yeah, well.
I'm on the fence about it. I
sure.
think because I am pretty sure that shoving cotton in your body every day for 5 days is not the greatest thing we've ever come
right.
up with.
Right, true.
I also, like, there's a lot of those newer ones that are, like, completely free of chemicals
yes.
and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I've been interested in that, because
yeah.
I do think that's probably also a problem, but I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I haven't made the jump to the period.
I think I'm going
to I'm afraid
it.
That just, I have really heavy
yeah.
periods. And
yeah.
I just would be, like, conscious of it every day. Because
mm-hmm.
that's why I don't wear only pads either. Because the last time I've tried that, it's just, like, on my mind all day. I can
sure.
feel it. And I'm like,
yep.
I'm sitting in my own blood. I'm sitting in my own blood. I'm sitting in my own blood. And it's really distracting.
It is.
Whereas with a tampon, you don't really think
yeah.
about it unless the string gets into a really odd mm-hmm. place and annoys you and scratches your...
no, it's...
Your lady bits. And
yeah.
you're just like, oh, this string is driving me batshit crazy.
String. I hate the ones where you have to wear both because it's... Like, I don't have the thick pads. I just do the
just
liners.
Just the liners, yeah.
But I do even the thicker liners for the heavier flow moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not regular by any means. At all. So, I mean, it's always hit and miss for me.
That's why I appreciate birth control so much. Because without it, I was a goddamn disaster. Where it would be like 3 weeks of bleeding and then followed by like 2 months of nothing and then a day and then nothing.
That's me.
It was off the charts crazy.
That's
and
me, no.
as a teenager, that's really hard to deal with.
Sure.
you end up with a lot of messes in your pants. Your jeans are fucking destroyed. Oh, and you're a teenager, so it's extra, like, mortifying.
Oh, yeah.
Because it happens at school and shit. And I finally was like, I have to fix this. And so, a doctor put me on birth control. I've been on it ever since. And at least then it's stable.
Sure.
Like, it still ranges from being, like, excruciating and I want to die for a week to being like, nah, it wasn't that bad. Yeah. But at least I know when it's coming and it comes at the same time and very so I do, like, thank God for birth control because it solves that.
Yeah, I was on birth control once and it did. That definitely helped. But that was because I didn't want to have babies. And then I found out, I can't have babies regularly anyway. So,
you could still be on birth control now. That's true. Yes. If you ever wanted to straighten out your period. Right.
Yeah, no, I like the surprise. I don't like the surprise.
That's not true. Nobody likes the surprise.
Yeah.
Well, that took a turn.
It did. Sorry.
Welcome to Clean and Sailor's period talk. Actually, we should explain. It happens to be we're both on our period.
That is true. We were complaining a couple days earlier.
So that may be why it's freshly on our minds.
Yeah, because I brought it up to Kalina. I said I saw a quote somewhere, and I don't remember the exact words, but it had something to do with what you were experiencing right now is everything that you were...
Is prepping, preparing
you for what you're going through right now. And so then I said to Kalina,
what the fuck does cramps?
Who the fuck wants period cramps?
What are those preparing you for?
Yes.
Fuck that.
So then that we quote just went dumb. On that quote really, I wanted to punch that quote in the face. I just was like, what the fuck is this? And that was when it was just starting. So it was typically
extra PMS-y.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we just went on a 3-hour rant about that. And it was awesome.
So yeah. That's that. What else? Oh, did we finish talking about the books? No.
Oh, we...
So the third book. So we definitely want to read the second books.
Did
I liked it because we liked her so much.
Yes, we want to read more of her books.
I want to read more of her and especially that Maxine Kiss.
Kiss.
The third one was interesting. I think I would read some of that series, the Fae series.
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about...
The Other World.
Yeah.
We're not too fond of the fourth story.
I would have to say the fourth one is definitely the most prude one of all, in the sense of there was zero sex in this one. At one point, Rule does say something about bestiality, but that's it. Like, it doesn't expand on it at all.
It's like a reference to a previous event.
That they had the night before.
This novella is supposed to take place at the same time as another book.
Yeah.
She said, so I'm guessing maybe that event happens in another book?
Maybe. I think the other book has something to do with those other two characters that are missing in a different realm.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't know are alive or dead or whatever. Mm. This part of the Lupus series.
Yeah.
That they've had. I don't know if it would be fair for us to say it's not a great book, because really by the end, or at least for me, I was expecting a lot more sex. So by the fourth one, really by the third one, I was like, okay, if I don't get sex in this one, I'm not going to fucking finish reading this book. And I did. I got sex in the second,
the
third
one.
Yeah,
we got sex in the third.
And then I read the fourth one, and then I went back to being a little disappointed. So
yeah.
The storyline I wasn't really interested at this point. So I don't know if it's fair to say because of the novellas that led us off into this book didn't really bring us what we wanted.
Yeah. It wasn't... Yeah. It
wasn't the greatest.
I mean, it was interesting, because this... I did find this book in the paranormal romance section of my used bookstore. So I really did expect a little bit more. And I think it was interesting how many similarities there were between the books. Usually in a compilation book like this, they just have the main thread.
Mm-hmm.
So this one inked, it should have just been tattoos.
Yeah.
But I think it was really fascinating that they chose writers whose main characters were all women in law enforcement who'd lost their mothers.
Yeah.
Like, those are big things that aren't true about all books.
Right.
So it's interesting that they kind of carried that thread as well as the tattoo thread through all four. I liked being able to read the different authors and compare them. So I did get a lot out of that.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I was disappointed that for a book that was supposed to be touted as romance, it was found in the romance section. So I take that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have to go back to my used bookstore and tell her that I would not put this book in the romance section.
No, not at all.
That it was a little bit shy on erotic sex scenes. I know they're all novellas, but you can have at least one in each one.
Yeah,
that's all I say.
This one's definitely way, way soft core porn.
Soft core.
Yeah.
Not except even for that porn, third one. Just soft romance.
Yeah, yeah. Except for the third one with a little bit of sex there. but...
Well, and the tension throughout.
Yes, the tension
throughout. It wasn't, like, good. That was good, because that kind of, like, kept
led
you,
up
like,
to it. Yeah.
Like, interested and, like, hyped up, because mm-hmm. every time they'd, like, touch or kiss, it'd be really intense.
Yeah.
And then you knew eventually,
yeah.
sex.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad I read it, though. I think it was a good one to experience and to talk about with the different... I've never read a novella type of book before where there's short mm-hmm. stories within one mm-hmm. that has a focus on one main thing, which are the tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was cool. So I mean, I enjoyed reading them. Just the fourth one wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
All right.
So on to our next one. We are going to be venturing into our next book, which is the first of a dragon series.
Yeah, it's called The Dragon Fires by Deborah Cook. The book is titled Kiss of Fire, and it's a series about dragons.
Woo-hoo.
Ooh, who are sexy men. But then they also sometimes are dragons. Mm-hmm. But they're also sexy men.
Yes.
Who are sometimes dragons. So yeah, Kiss of Fire by Deborah Cook is the next book we're going to read.
Yes.
Cool?
Yeah.
All right. So please come back next time mm-hmm. for Kiss of Fire. And we hope you guys enjoyed our little conversation today and even all the weird tangents we took.
That's us. That's our normal. That is.
And we don't want to, like, you know, make anything off limits per se.
For sure. All right.
That's what happens.
Yes.
Well, thank you. This has been We're Reading Dirty Books. I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And thank you.
Listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode for some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy music and amazing introduction.